Blog Talk Radio.
This is your host, Tamara L. Thank you for tuning in to State of the Nationals that airs every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Now, tonight's episode, we have Jamal Abdullah Talib Bey of Rise of the Moors, voicing from Rhode Island Corporation, who will discuss the inherent power of a Moorish militia. Now, tonight, we're going to be dealing with some topics. Just militia, right to bear arms, covenants of the Quran, as well as Bible, and we're going to also deal with treaty protection. Now, with that being said, let's just go ahead and get started and bring on Jamal Abdullah Talib Bey. Good evening, Jamal.
Peace. How you doing?
I'm good. Peace to you, Noble. Thank you for accepting this invitation to speak to the Nationals this evening.
Thank you for having me.
As always, as always. Now, I know on the flyer, on the advertisement topic, we dealt with a particular surah in the Quran. And let's just read that. It's surah chapter 7. I'm sorry, chapter 8, verse 73. And it says, the unbelievers are protectors, one of another. Unless ye do this, that means protect each other, there will be tumult and oppression on earth and great mischief. Now, this evening's discussion is going to, we're going to share some light on the tale of two nations. Now, before we do that, let's just start off by giving the listeners some background information about yourself.
Oh, okay. My name's Jamal. I served. Oh yeah, Jamal Talib Abdullah Bey. I served in the United States Marine Corps in the year 2010 to 2014. I graduated high school 2010, and 6 days after I graduated, I went to Parris Island to Marine Corps boot camp. While I was in, I got meritoriously promoted out of boot camp. I was a fourth squad leader. And then did a whole Marine Corps combat training and all that good stuff. And while I was in the Marines, I was stationed in Okinawa, Japan. I was part of the 31st MEU, which MEU stands for Marine Expeditionary Unit. I was part of 7th Communications Battalion. Then I was part of the 7th Fleet of the United States Navy, well, the United States Marine Corps, and the Navy in general, because the Marines go wherever the Navy is on their ships, the Marines are on their ships to protect them. While I was part of the 31st MEU, I traveled to the Philippines, mainland Japan, and then I was fortunate enough to go to South Korea on a separate ship. This was, you know, after I left that 31st MEU unit, I went back to my old unit. Then they sent me on a ship again because of my abilities. While I was on the 31st MEU, I got a meritorious award for my basically for the things that I did. I got awarded for my merit. Then I got out the Marines 2014, and then I was introduced to more science late 2015, around that time. And then ended up forming the Rise of the Moors organization to help our people. And basically, one of the main things that attracted me, or one of the main things that I knew that I would fit into this movement, is one, when I heard Tar Sariq Bey talk about the Marine Corps hymn, "From the Halls of Montezuma to the Shores of Tripoli," talks about the Moorish Empire. And then when I read that Prophet Nobuldra Ali said that he was a prophet and a general. and that whole general side in my military background, and the lack of basically discipline that our people have as a whole, and my willingness to provide some type of discipline or interest in providing some type of discipline. That's kind of how I found my niche in war science. That's basically it. In a nutshell.
Okay, so your time period of serving in the military, your knowledge regarding your Moorish history, was it ever brought up in conversation?
Not directly, but there's more science encoded in everything in the military. You know, when you study more science, you'll see where the ancient seafarers and then, you know, the entire naval force of the United States really belongs to the Moors. You know, if you look at the eagle, globe, and anchor, which I still have tattooed on both of my arms to this day, you'll see it's the eagle sitting on top of the world, but it only shows the Americas. You know, so that's the capital dominion of the Moorish Empire. They don't have a navy anchor, a ship anchor on it, which, you know, right now the United States Navy is dominating, you know, the seven seas and the five oceans. And, interesting enough about the seven seas, you know, our ancestors traversed the seven seas, and on the belt loops of the trousers, of the pants, of the military uniform, there's seven belt loops to represent the seven seas. And if you look at your pants, it makes a circle around your waist, so it's a circle seven, right? Then
right.
On the Marine Corps sword, when you get promoted to an NCO, you get a blood stripe. There's a whole ceremony that goes behind it. It's quote unquote hazing, but I don't think it is. I think it's a rite of passage. But anyway, once you get a blood stripe on your uniform, you rate a sword, which means you're allowed to have a sword. And when you're going through sword manual, which is basically how to march and how to give commands as far as the sword, one preparatory command is called draw, and then the command of execution is sword. But when you get that preparatory command on draw, you draw your sword out. I think it's an inch or 10 inches. I can't remember. It's been so long. But you draw it out to the point where there's a six-pointed star. That represents the higher self and lower self. That's on the Marine Corps sword. And it's if any Marines are listening, you know that the Marines are the only branch that still uses swords. So this is the oldest, you know, military weapon in U.S. history, and it has the six-pointed star on it, which represents the higher self and lower self. Then if you look at the Marine Corps dress blue alphas, that dark blue coat with the light blue pants and, you know, the good-looking one, you'll see the belt, the white belt separates your higher self from your lower self, you know. Then if you look at, we used to have, what was it called? I can't remember exactly what it was called, but we used to have these events in the field where, you know, the commanding officer would basically be like the chairman or the head mason guy, and you know you would stand up and you know ask the commanding officer to address the floor and move about freely, and that entire process of cheering or giving toast to all the fallen Marines and things like that, all of that is codified within the Masonic Lodge, which preserves Moorish history and Moorish culture. So as I was waking up to more science and knowing what masonry was and connecting it back to us teaching them everything, it literally is in with every structure of the United States, even in the military, if that makes sense. You know,
right,
and then the white hat that we wear, that we would wear. I'm no longer a Marine, obviously, but I still have all my uniforms. You know, that white hat that we would wear with the gold eagle, globe, and anchor in the center, that represent the white represents purity, and then it represents your crown chakra, and then the gold eagle, globe, and anchor in the center represents your crown chakra. So all of that is codified within everything about the military. You know, whether you know it or not, there's something called esprit de corps. Esprit de corps means the spirit of the body. You know, which is where you get the few, the proud, the Marines from. You know, that spirit of pride of being, you know, the 1% of the U.S. population, that is the spirit of the body, of the Marine Corps. You know, the word corps means body, or corpse means body. You know, then you have the warrior's ethos, which is, you know, codified within the Quran itself. You know, they'll say liberty or death. In the Quran, it says victory or you die a martyr. You know, so what's the difference? You know, and in the Quran, it'll say, you know, fight those who fight you. And then the whole premise of the United States being at war is because of what? Terrorism. So the whole reason why the United States is, quote unquote, at war, although it's a lie, it's because they've been attacked first, when that's not really the case. You know, so literally and you'll see in the Quran where it talks about how spiritual warfare and physical warfare are governed by the same virtues. So the fact that the United States has a physical military presence and utilizes that is honoring all of nature's law, all of the divine law, everything. So the entire, although the intent behind what the U.S. is doing isn't, you know, what more is all about, but the science that they're operating off of is more science. Their intent is a whole different issue, which we know that, you know, in the Quran that Nabi Ali gave us, the sin lies in the intent, not the act itself.
Right.
So, yeah, I would say everything is more science.
Now, you mentioned the spirit of the court, and in that spirit of the court, that spirit of the court was cut from the Moorish nation. Now, in history, there's like an encrypted message and an allegory about the United States Corporation overthrowing the Moorish Empire, taking down our flag and erasing us out of history, and only just leaving a trace of signs and symbols of the Moorish Empire. Now, that brings us to good old Georgie boy. George Washington made in his secret document, he made a statement, and I'm going to read that for our people. It said, if we would agree to take the fezes and the turbans off the Moor's head and remove the sandals from their feet and enforce it with severe punishment, and to also swear a death oath between ourselves to religiously and faithfully not to allow anyone to teach Moorish children who they really are and who their forefathers and foremothers were, and to only allow Moorish children to be taught that they are truly Negroes, black, and colored folks. Now, with that being said, you mentioned that the foundation of the military is the foundation of the Moorish science. So basically, it's just a usurpation of our power that we once had when we were rulers of the high seas, and those different nations paid tribute to us. Now, let's get into the Moorish militia, because Rise of the Moors and Other Body Politics, I think this is a great subject to tap into, because, you know, you hear a lot of unconscious Moors to say, you know, well, you don't have a military. So to me, it's like a cop-out. So you would rather remain.
Yeah, intellectual cowards.
Right. You would rather remain on your neck. You may not see the feet on your neck. It may have happened physically to someone recently, and others it happened to, but most recent display is what is his name, George Floyd, with the feet on his neck. But we literally have a feet on our neck daily in a system that continues to remove us from our nationality and inherited right of self-preservation and to protect ourselves. Mm-hmm. So let's get into that about the Moorish militia, the inherent power of a Moorish militia.
Yeah. So let me start off by saying, when you said that they usurped our power, they did it by having us think we're part of their system. Because like I said, when I was stationed on several ships, when I was on those ships, there was nothing but Asiatics running the majority of the ship. And I'm talking about so-called Filipinos too, the Moros. There were a lot of dark-skinned people on the ship, you know, making sure that the ship, the daily functions of the ship are working properly. So we are literally part of the United States colonial oppressive system that's oppressing the planet. We have been a deeply rooted part of that, you know, which is also why we're suffering, because when we fight in their war, they'll tell you in the Rex 84 plan, the King Alfred plan, they'll tell you in the Black Messiah Act, they'll tell you in the Negro or the ghetto informant program of the COINTELPRO FBI, that they're going to put our people, Asiatics, dark-skinned people, at the tip of the spear, so where all the fighting is happening, so that way any one of us that gets any type of combat experience will most likely die off in combat. And of course, when we get out, when we become veterans, we're basically tossed to the side, and this is where you get the whole 22 veterans a day are committing suicide, because we're basically garbage. Once we're no longer serving Rome, this is what they do. You'll get out for a little bit. They know you're going to struggle because they didn't give you enough time to transition. You become garbage, and then they'll call you again to get you to reenlist. But anyway, as far as the Moorish militia, I want to first start by reading the Second Amendment and by stating that Noble Jarley told us to enforce the Constitution. So this is what the Second Amendment states. A well-regulated militia, so now you're talking about organization, being necessary. So it's telling you this is necessary for what? To the security of a free state. Now, what does that mean? The word state, according to Black's Law Dictionary, fifth edition, is a people permanently occupying a fixed territory bound together by common law habits, which would be our nationality, and customs, which would be our culture, into one body politic exercising through the medium of an organized government, that's that free national government, independent sovereignty and control over all persons and things within its boundaries, capable of making war and peace, and of entering into international relations with other communities of the globe. So now they're talking about treaties. It also talks about, in its larger sense, a state is a body politic or society of men. Then another definition is a body of people occupying a definite territory and politically or organized under one government. So the word state means people. So it's telling you, in order to be a free people and be secure, you must have a militia. Right? So I'll read that again. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, a free people, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. That is the entire basis of why we need a militia. And look at how, like you stated earlier, these Europeans are able to just stomp on our necks and nothing happens. You know, and then we go to them to try to seek some type of remedy when they're the ones stomping on our necks. So if your enemy has guns and they're literally stomping on your neck, oppressing you, murdering your people in the streets, that means you're not a free people, right? The Constitution is telling you, in order to be a free people, you have to have a well-regulated militia, and you must bear arms. Literally. You know, and the right to bear arms isn't a granted right. The Constitution just secures your pre-existing right to bear arms, because all the religious books about your right to defend yourself, as an example, in the Holy Bible, Ecclesiastes, which is dealing with religious law. So Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verses 1 to 9, talks about how there's a time for everything. There's a time to reap and a time to sow. There's a time to love. There's a time to hate. There's a time to cast stones. There's a time to gather thrones up, and then it'll even tell you there's a time for war and there's a time for peace. It says right in the Bible. Then the book of John, if I'm not mistaken, Jesus told you that ye are gods. You know, so if the whole parable goes, Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven, and God is the king of earth and heaven, and ye are gods, then whatever your idea of heaven is, you should be able to manifest it here on this earth. So in your mindset, if your heaven is, your people aren't going to be stomped on, your people aren't going to be shot in the face, your people aren't going to be, you know, murdered and then their children also get shot, your people aren't going to be pulled over constantly, snatched out their cars, window busted, your people aren't going to have Europeans showing up to their doors and taking their children from their homes for no reason, your people aren't going to have to pay taxes to a foreigner on their land, well, then you have to do something about that, since you are God. And the only way to secure a free state, it is necessary that you form a militia. And if anyone, you know, says, well, Noble Jolly didn't teach that, then why did he say in the oral statements that these Europeans are not going to stop until they look death in the face? Now, this is not a cry out for anyone to do anything. This is saying that a bully is used to picking on or bullying someone who that bully thinks is inferior to them. So since we don't have guns, of course it's easy for someone to stomp on our neck. Now, if we were organized, militarized, we have our, you know, bulletproof armor from AR500armor.com or any other place where we can get bulletproof sappy plates and plate carriers, and we had rifles on, you know, on our shoulder at all times, condition one, then these terrorists, these colonizers, these foreigners would be less inclined to stomp on our necks. They'll be less inclined to shoot at us because now you're talking about equal and opposite force. You know, literally, if you study the psychology of a bully, bullies don't want to pick on someone that they think can beat them. So in order to keep us suppressed, one of the things one of the military strategies that they use is called rapid dominance via shock and awe. So this whole, you know, televising of us being murdered, that is a military tactic to shatter our will to fight. Right? Then they'll have what appears to be a superior number of people in the streets armed, meanwhile we're not armed. You know, and they'll do things like they'll call in the National Guard, which if you ask any active duty military, we call them weekend warriors because they don't live an active duty life. They're literally civilians 90% of the time, and then on the weekend they get to play like they're in the military. So these people aren't trained. They just have the appearance of, oh my God. You know, so just like the riots in the 90s and recently with these riots, they call in the National Guard. They look uniformed. They all have guns. But I'm telling you from experience, 90% of these people don't know how to shoot. 90% of these people have never seen any type of action whatsoever. 90% of these people aren't ready for any type of actual revolution on our part. They're just numbers to put in front of us to, again, cause that rapid dominance via shock and awe. To put that, oh my God, there's so much of them, when it has nothing to do with the amount of people there are. It's, are they willing to actually fight back? Are they going to fire back at American citizens? No, they're not, because that's one of the topics we would have while I was in the Marines. Can these people shoot? Most of them can't. You know, so when it comes to a militia, and when I said Nobuhar Ali said these Europeans are not going to stop until they look death in the face, that doesn't mean we have to shoot at all. No one has to die at all. It could just be, okay, we're tired of you murdering our people, so we're going to show you our willingness to stand up. Once they see us united, that's more than enough fear, let alone, you know, violence, which I'm not advocating for. I'm only advocating for self-defense, but in that self-defense, you know, it's kind of like a beehive. You're less inclined to just walk up to a beehive and stick your hand in it and take the honey, because you know those bees have stingers and you can get hurt. So likewise, these Europeans, they would be less likely to violate us if they seen us militant, they seen us disciplined, they seen us with an actual militia and resources and logistics and strategy, you know, which they know we don't have because of, one, things like the FBI Black Messiah Act, which the FBI's job is to murder, well, they say neutralize, but murder anyone who's talking about uniting or electrifying or inspiring our people to form a nationalized militia, which they call a true so-called black revolution or a Mau Mau. You know, that's what they don't want, which is exactly what we need, especially with the United Republic of Morocco. Once the Moors elect officials, who's going to be protecting those officials?
You're absolutely right about that.
Yeah,
I said you're absolutely right about that, and that's one thing that we have on our agenda. Now, I want to back up just a little bit because you mentioned some things when you mentioned the Constitution. You mentioned treaty. You also mentioned the land, the natural land of the people. So let's go back to let's just kind of rewind a little bit to the tale of the two nations. Now, right now, we're dealing with a body of people that's under colonization, which means that, and in dealing with that, we have mercenary members of de facto plenipotentiary powers on the American land, which Al Morocco, America, in contract with the United States Trading Company and a subsidiary operating as the gangs of New York, commonly known as policemen. So we're dealing with that.
Mm-hmm.
So now, being that this is Morocco, this is the Moorish Empire. Now, let's back up before that constitution, the Lenin and Opie Moors of 1778 helped form the United States Colonization
mm-hmm.
Corporation. So let's just back up to that treaty protection that supersedes, that's supreme law land before that
yep.
constitution. Because I think it's important for people to know the power of the treaty. And one
yeah.
would say, oh, you know, people are, you know, they just want to claim to be a Moor so they can utilize the treaty. Now, come on, let's get real about this thing. Let's just have common sense. You were something before somebody told you you were something else. So
mm-hmm.
with that being said, even with that something else, before someone told you was black, Negro, and color, okay, let's just say you were an Indian. We'll just play with that ideology. Okay, there's a protection in that. There's a treaty within that called the Delaware Lenape Treaty of 1778. There's a protection in that. So as knowing that we are the Moors, the Indian Moors of the land, let's deal with those treaty protections that supersedes even the Constitution, because the Constitution just it doesn't enforce the treaty. It say, okay, the treaty is the supreme law land. Therefore, the Constitution puts it in effect to say, okay, the citizens of the people of that citizenry must behave in accordingly. So let's look at some of those treaty powers that we kind of tend to overlook. Let's look at that. One of the ones I want to look at is the Jay Treaty. Now, I just want to look at the Jay Treaty talks about in Article 1 that there shall be a firm and volatile and universal peace and a true and sincere friendship between His Britannic Majesty, His heirs and successors, and the United States of America, and between their respective country, territory, cities, towns, and people of every degree, without exception of persons or places. So I think we need to look at these treaties and enforce them, put them on the table, because they are the supreme law of this land. Because the
yeah.
United States Service Corporation do not have land. They do not own land. They may be usurping the power of the land. They do not have the land and the resources. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, so there's a stare decisis and res judicata, you know, decisions made by not just Supreme Court justices, but justices within the several colonies or the several states, where they stated that treaties supersede statutes, and any standing treaty doesn't need to be enforced. It's already part of the supreme law of the land, so it doesn't need to be mentioned. It's already law. You understand what I'm trying to say?
Right. It's self
executing.
We just have to execute it. We just have to execute it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's self executing. All you have to do is bring it up. You know, which supreme law of the land. That means more shouldn't be in state level courts. It has to be on a federal level, which is consular court. You know, that's dealing with Article 3, Section 1 and 2 of the Constitution, where it states that, you know, of course, the original jurisdiction shall be vested in one Supreme Court, but then it mentions the inferior courts, which Congress may ordain from time to time, and it'll state the jurisdiction of those courts in Article 3, Section 2, and it'll mention suits between states and citizens or subjects of foreign states. So the state would be, as an example, I'm in so-called Rhode Island, which is really Narragansett. So the state would be the state of Rhode Island. So if the state of Rhode Island has a problem with me or any other Moor, so it would be state of Rhode Island versus Jamal Khalil Abdullah Bey, the treaty applies in that situation because of the issue of diversity of citizenship. Not only that, but if it's the state versus me, there can't be a state judge making a final decision because there's a conflict of interest. The state judge is hired by the state. So if the state is a party in a suit, it can't be the judge over itself, which is why, you know, the separation of powers exists and the Constitution exists and states that federal courts have jurisdiction over that issue because of the diversity. And even if, you know, the states are claiming that, you know, you're not a Moor and your ID is not valid and this is your fake strongman name, even in the Constitution, there's remedy for that. The issue still must be litigated in federal court because, again, Article 3, Section 2 states that federal courts shall have jurisdiction over issues between states and citizens thereof. Because, again, a state judge can't adjudicate over an issue between itself and someone else. Of course, you're always going to rule in your own favor. You know, so that's part of the supremacy of treaties, you know, and the reason why the treaties have supremacy is because, one, it came before the adoption of the Constitution for the United States of America, and two, these Europeans are on our land, so we had to establish a way for us to communicate while they're on our land, and three, when you deal with the issue of diversity of citizenship or diversity of nationality, which is based on our culture and the fact that we're different, you know, you can retrospectively apply, because it's based on the common law principles, the act of state doctrine, which states that no nation can judge another nation's actions done on their own land, which is, again, a separation. So when it comes to us being a sovereign nation of people, in order for us to be able to enforce any of our laws, we have to have a militia, especially with reference to a treaty, because the treaty is strictly there for peace. Once that treaty is violated, the peace is violated. Once the peace is violated, what does that mean? It's wartime. So how could we possibly have a peace treaty, it being violated, which means it's time for war, and we don't have a military? And,
well,
and not just that,
war.
Even if you...
We are being warred on. We are
absolutely.
Being... We're not,
absolutely.
We're not warring, but we are being warred upon. And
absolutely.
I think, you know, as we, you know, and the beautiful thing about State of the Nationals is that we have our beautiful people that tune in and hear just our outcry of attempting to just throw that raft out there and bring consciousness. It's like the saying they say in the Bible, breathe on these dead bones. We're attempting to breathe onto our people and helping give life to that in which has been
mm-hmm.
taken. And in doing so,
mm-hmm.
we are also, we come into this battle, this in-house battle. We come into this in-house battle because for over the past, you know, I don't know what a 400 come in. I still can't calculate that. You know, we still have this mental rapage, pillage of over 200 years of not being ourselves. We have all, even the ones that's listening, we have all been born into a fraud. And we
mm-hmm.
have not been born unto ourselves. And with that being said, that creates a division and a war of, well, you know, I will accept that which was placed upon me, but that which is the truth, I would invalidate it, as opposed to seeking to research it, understand it, and it becomes an in-house battle between someone who looks just such as me and you, you know,
yeah.
Let alone, you know, they've coined term is coined black on black crime. Now it becomes mm-hmm. a mental battle of just trying to save your people to get into the
yep.
proper status so we can be seen as a nation and be able to
yep.
enforce the treaties, you know, and be able
yep.
to govern ourselves. You know, it's like we got a ship sitting over here that's empty.
Yeah. What you're talking about is you know, symbolized in the Bible where it says, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's and unto God what is God's. But people think the word rend means to give.
Mm-hmm.
It means to cut.
That's
so
right.
cut the connection that ties you to them, which is telling you nationalize, because Caesar's culture ain't your culture. You know, and when you study like just our history in general, there's always been times when, you know, historically the Europeans, the so-called white man who's not white, the Europeans were referred to as Christians because that was predominantly their religion. Their religion of Christianity was forced on us via the Inquisition and the Christian Black Codes of 1724 after the Willie Lynch letter of 1712 and then the Great Awakening of 1740. Historically, we were referenced as Muslims. So you'll see, whenever you read basically any history book about our people, you'll see where we had a territory on lock. Let's say Egypt as an example, what we refer to as Egypt today, and the, you know, the ancient mystery schools, which we already know Egypt was here. But just for the sake of reaching people where they are, let's pretend that, well, I'm talking about Egypt over there. You'll see in a book called The Stolen Legacy by George G.M. James, you'll see where the Romans came into Egypt, defeated our military, and then they said they also needed to destroy our religion. So then they made it illegal for our people to practice the ancient Kemetic mystery schools, which then you'll see in the book where the Moors had to go underground as the custodians of Egyptian philosophy to keep that culture alive, right? So the Europeans came in, defeated our military. A lot of us had to retreat, go into hiding. And then the Europeans put Christianity on our people in that area. Then we mustered up our forces, you know, those of us who left, those of us who kept the fight going. We came back into the land, got rid of the Europeans, and then we had to deal with that Christian mindset of our people, just like we're dealing with right now.
Absolutely.
So, the same thing that our ancestors had already went through, we're going through again because we're stuck in this cycle. So this is often where so-called black people will say, well, the Moors enslaved blacks with Islam because we were trying to tell our people, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's. This is your original culture. This is how they defeated us. And once our people kept refusing that, then we had to deal with them accordingly. And I'm not justifying it. I'm just saying in war, you have to utilize certain tactics in order to accomplish your mission for the benefit of everyone. So if the people you're trying to benefit are in the way, you have to remove them out of the way. Just like in The Matrix, when Morpheus was telling Neo about the people who are still stuck in The Matrix, he said, you know, be careful with them because they might be your enemy too. You know, there's an agent within them too, because their mindset is still stuck on the system or the matrix that has coddled them, that's keeping them complacent. So if you're shaking that system up and they see how they've been reliant on that system, whether they want to believe it or not, they're going to attack you, even though what you're trying to do is cut their chains off. But what they have done is they have identified with those chains. Instead of cutting it off and running around to Caesar with a Caesar, they've adopted Caesar's ways. They've adopted Rome's ways, which the main tool that they do that with, force our people to adopt their culture and their ways, is with the birth certificate. That's why we call it a transmitting utility, because they're transmitting their energy onto us, right? So they'll create the birth certificate, which is the 14th Amendment citizen. They'll have us believing that it's us, so when they do their spell work to it, we're automatically applying it to us. So just like me, I thought I was that 14th Amendment citizen. You know, they told us, oh, yeah, blacks are U.S. citizens. We're all U.S. citizens. So I'm like, okay, since we're all this, I'm going to join their military. You understand? So that's how this works.
Right.
The mindset, since I didn't have my culture, and I believed in what they told me, I was a Roman. I was a Roman citizen. That's what I was. That's what I thought I was. When I was really just Roman fodder, I didn't know that I wasn't a citizen. You know, this is where that whole second class citizen crap comes into play, where we're just pawns in their game. So in order to prevent more of our people for dying and fighting for Rome, we have to have something else that our warriors can come to. And then when it comes to us enforcing laws as it relates to protecting our people and defending ourselves against colonial occupation, we have to have that militia to do so, because what I've noticed, as an example, with the Moorish American Consulate, you know, there'll be so-called judges that will issue an order, but it's just like, okay, you wrote that down on a piece of paper, now what? You know,
right.
Because when it comes to these Europeans, they don't just make orders on a piece of paper. No, they'll send someone with a gun to enforce that, you know, which is why you brought up earlier what it says in the Quran, the believers are protectors of one another. Unless you do this, protect each other, it would be tonal and oppression on earth and great mischief. That tonal is our people in the streets yelling, no justice, no peace. Black Lives Matter, that's tumultuous behavior. And oppression is, of course, them killing us. And in the Quran of Muhammad transliterated or translated by Abdullah Yusuf Ali, if you go to the commentary on chapter 8, verse 73, or Surah 8, Ayat 73, he'll give you commentary on it. It says, evil consorts with evil. The good have all the more reason for drawing together and not only living in mutual harmony, which Prophet Obujali said, if you can, live close to each other, right? But being ready at all times to protect each other. Otherwise, the world will be given over to aggressions by unscrupulous people, and the good will fail in their duty to establish Allah's peace and to strengthen all the forces of truth and righteousness. So that is the exact situation that we are in. Since we keep claiming, and this is why I told you, in our private conversation a few days ago, how our people will use their intellect to hide their cowardice. You know, instead of just admitting you're afraid, that's why you don't want to live close to each other and defend each other. You're just going to lie and say, well, this is just a spiritual fight and not a physical fight. So Allah's leading and victory is sure. So now you're trying to clean your hands, wipe your hands clean, when Nobudrali told you in the beginning of the Quran that Allah and man are one. And he only debased himself through carnal thoughts and deeds. So by you separating yourself by saying, oh, Allah's leading and victory is sure, and you thinking you don't have to do anything, you're mentally separating yourself from the divine creator, which separates yourself from your right to self-preservation because you're violating your own laws of nature and your own divine law because you're God. You know, that's why the Quran says that. If evil's doing it, if evil is able to unite, you should be able to unite. Especially it says, look, the good have all the more reason for drawing together and not only living in mutual harmony, but being ready at all times to protect each other, not stand there and record it.
And scream and yell at the event that's taking place.
That's not going to stop a criminal. Show me when a criminal has a gun to your back at the ATM saying, give me all your money, and you say, no, no justice, no peace, and then they stop. Or you say, no, that's a crime, and then they stop. Criminals don't follow the law. They don't.
Not happening. Now, what would you say, what steps would one take as, you know, we understand that throughout Amexum, you know, the rising of the Moors is occurring. And one would say, well, you know, the Moors haven't done anything and I haven't seen the manifestation on the Moors. Well, you know,
you are
that
Moor,
thinking,
and you,
you know,
done
exactly.
Anything.
Right. You know, then I would tell one, you know, if the Albion thought like that, we would still be in power. Mm-hmm. But they thought enough of themselves to have a few to want to go save the many. So it only takes a few to save the many. So in the body politics that are forming all throughout Abexum and rising up, the Moors are rising and attempting to save as many, you know, it's like that spirit of Harriet Tubman. I would have saved many more if they only knew they were slaves.
Mm-hmm.
We would save as many as we can if they knew they were Moors. With that being said, what would the formation of a Moorish militia look like? What would you say would be the blueprint of put that together?
As far as Moors, and they know my spirit when I say that. They would have to know who they are to know what they're fighting for, so that if they die, they know what they died for. That's for the Moors. That's for the Moors that are warriors, right? Now, there's also other Moors that are warriors that don't know that they're Moors, and we can't turn them away simply because they don't identify as being quote unquote Moorish, because they still are Moors and they still know that there's a problem. And they're still going to be willing to fight. Although they might not clearly know what it is, they're still going to be willing to fight. Now, the reason why I say that, and I know that this is true, is because, again, I thought I was a U.S. citizen, which I was not. I thought the two-party Democratic and Republican system was constitutional, which it was not. And I thought terrorists came here and blew some stuff up, and that's why we're at war. All of that was wrong, and I was still willing to give my life for Rome. So we as Moors have to use our intelligence and realize we can't just turn this person away because of the word that they're using. Because remember, Nowud Ali told us we have to get rid of those names and principles that delude the slavery. So some of our people who still identify as that name, they still have the principles of freedom. They still have the willingness to fight. And if you look at some of the Moors, yeah, they might not identify as black, but they have no national principles. Prophet told us we need both. And if we can't have both at the same time, then we'll take those who have one or the other, and we'll make it work, because we have to make this work. You know, look at the, as you said, with the different European organizations, the different Masonic orders. Yeah, they have, you know, their own separate orders, their own separate agendas, but they're able to come together. Why? Because one temple isn't telling the other temple to abandon their beliefs to associate with them. We have to stop doing that to each other. We can say, yeah, you can still identify as Hebrew Israelite. And as a Moor, I know you're a Moor, whether you know it or not. But I need to know, are you going to be willing to defend whatever it is that you believe in against this common enemy? Once we get rid of this common enemy, then we can debate all day about if we're Moors or Hebrews or not. Because I know for a fact this oppressor does not care about what you call yourself. Now, spiritually, it matters what you call yourself, of course. That's why the prophet came to tell us that, to cleanse our spirit. But as long as we have all these oppressive, you know, spirits on our land, we need to unite with those who have the spirit of the warrior to fight against that. Then we can deal with, all right, you ain't a Hebrew, you're a Moor, because this is what Ibri really means. You ain't, you know, Chem doesn't mean black, so get rid of, you can still claim to be a Chemite, but it don't mean black. So just get on these national principles, and let's fight against this common enemy. Then we could deal about. Then we could deal with how we identify ourselves once this enemy is off our back. So those are the two things I would say. Teaching our people, of course, putting the word out so that way they know what to fight for, why there's a fight, you know, what they're fighting for. So in the event, if they die, which they probably won't, because once we actually unify, these Europeans are not going to want any smoke with us, and especially if we muster enough power. I've been in contact with several Marines that I've been in, that I served with, and they see the problem. You know, so a lot of the military personnel, they're not going to fight against us. You know, they're going to see exactly what we're doing, especially if we're using proper military tactics and we're putting information out there for people. They're definitely not going to want to fight against us, because we're fighting for the Republic. We're fighting for the Constitution. We ain't against it. It's just we're a separate nation of people. So, you know, teaching our people, and then again, stop focusing on minor discrepancies or problems that, in the face of the real problem, mean absolutely nothing. You know, because I know some warriors that don't identify as being a Moorish American, and they're warriors. You know, like warriors.
And I get that. You know? I get that. And that's the thing we have. We have Moors who understand their Moorish heritage, and you have those who have not sat down, have not sat mm-hmm. into the knowledge of that, and they mm-hmm. operate also in a they still operate in that jurisdiction, and they mm-hmm. think that I must have a license to bear arms.
Mm-hmm.
I must get permission
yeah.
because that's what license means. I must get permission yeah. from the crown to be able to protect my
mm-hmm.
my body, my person, my kinship. Now, let me tell you one thing. If somebody come in your home and attacking your loved ones or come after you and things of that nature, I will hope the last thing on your mind is about a license that's needed.
Yeah.
And so that mindset is will
self-defeating.
Right, very, very, very.
Yeah.
And
so
and
now
like
I,
you said.
I,
mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna say I fully comprehend the mindset, because there isn't enough of us organized to help protect each other. So I get it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you're gonna get a license just so you don't get messed with right now. But now further. You know, our effort to liberation. Don't just get the license and then be complacent. Like, okay, I'm okay, so I got to worry about no one else. Don't do that. you know, that's also self-defeating, you know, because we have an obligation to protect each other. So if you're going to get the license, okay, cool. I'm personally not going to judge you, you know, and if other Moors do it, that's fine. But realize why you're getting that license. Don't get it because of fear. Get it because you recognize, okay, I'm oppressed right now. And under this system, if I want to potentially fight against oppression, okay, I'll so-called submit to this system, but only because I'm trying to get this thing out of it so I can later fight against this system. With that mindset, that's fine. But with the, let me just fucking submit, that's not, excuse my language, that's not acceptable. <You know. laughs> And can I read this verse in the Quran of Muhammad as well?
It's, yeah, go ahead.
Chapter 8 or Surah 8, verse 65. It says, O Prophet, rouse the believers to the fight. So let's examine that. One, Allah is commanding her prophet to fight. Allah is commanding her prophet to teach the people to get ready for a pre-existing fight, which, remember, you know, our elders, well, my elders, Taj Tariq Bey and Abdullah El-Talib Mosley Bey, said they're waging war against us. That's why it says in the Quran, rouse the believers to the fight. There's already a fight happening.
Mm-hmm.
They don't say start one, right? Then they'll say, if there are 20 amongst you, here's the key word, patient and preserving, which means trained, they will vanquish 200. If 100, they will vanquish 1,000 of the unbelievers. For these are people without understanding. This is why I say, you know, when you see the National Guard out on the street, these people are weekend warriors. They're not built for anything. They're not built for any type of opposition. These people will fold in the sight of any type of opposition, which I'm not encouraging people to do. I'm just letting you know that for the future, as we prepare to defend ourselves, these people are not ready. Just because you see the army or whatever, these people are reserves, army reserves. They're called weekend warriors. They are not ready for anything. They're just a presence to shatter your will to fight, which is where you get these religious philosophies of, you know, fear Allah. You don't fear man. You fear Allah because you don't know if once the bullets start flying, you don't know how many of those people are going to run scared. And if you know anyone who's been in the military, who know anyone who's been in a combat situation, people who have been in combat will tell you, I've seen the people who claim to be the bravest when shit's not hitting the fan, but when shit's the fan, they're crying. So don't think that just because these people are in the military that they even have a reason to fight. We have more of a reason to fight. This is our land. They're oppressing us. They have no right to do that to us, and they've been doing it for years. We have more than enough reason to fight. Then in the annotations, it says this. In a fight, odds of 10 to 1 against anyone are appalling, but they do not daunt the men of faith. And like I said, I know 90% of these people aren't ready to fight. That's why I'm a man of faith, right? Personally, win or die, their cause prevails. This is what Fred Hampton said. You can kill a revolutionary, but you cannot kill a revolution. They are sure to win because, one, they have divine aid. And two, even humanly speaking, those who take up arms against truth and righteousness are fools, and their seeming power is but a broken reed. That broken reed is again, once they see us coming, militant and disciplined, these weekend warriors are not used to that. And the reason why I keep focusing on the weekend warriors is because, one, they're just civilians. And two, the United States is so busy at war with everyone else, they're not going to be able to bring their troops back to even fight us. Once we start defending ourselves, not attacking anyone, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying defending ourselves.
Right. And not with your cell phone.
Say it again?
Now, I said, not with your cell phone. We have
exactly.
About the last 5 minutes left. I would have loved to open up the call, but I thought this was just, This was a great topic. It's so necessary, and I would love to bring you back again because we have to really get an understanding of this. I am so sick of every time I turn on a social site or turn on anything, mm-hmm. I'm seeing people screaming on the floor,
yep.
up against a wall, in their car, being dragged,
yep.
being snatched, and only thing our people are doing is just recording and screaming.
Yep.
There's no protection in that, and it really hardens you. Really, it's heartening, disheartening, because you feel as if, especially as a woman, you feel, where's the protection at? You know, where's the protection? Because it's also happening so much to the women. And I know we got this last 4 minutes. Before we close out, do you want to give anyone some information, how to reach out to you, contact you, or any of that nature?
Yes. On Instagram, you can reach us at Moorish Militia. You can also add Rise of the Moors. It's rise_of_the_moors on Instagram. RiseOfTheMoors@gmail.com. I have a website, riseofthemoors.org. You know, of course, you can learn at rvbaypublications.com. Of course, watch all the videos at the House of Reawakening Mind. And just study everything. Don't just believe what I'm saying. Study everything that I say, because I could be wrong, you know, and just realize everything. You know, one of my favorite verses in the Holy Bible is, observe all things which I commanded of you, and lo, the truth is with you always. If you observe nature, you'll see everything in nature is about self-preservation. Everything in nature defends itself. We're the only piece of nature not doing it.
Wow. With that being said, brother, I want to thank you again for accepting the invitation to speak to the Nationals. Nationals, I want to thank you for tuning in to State of the Nationals, and please continue to join us every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Blog Talk Radio, United Republic of Morocco. Now, if you'd like to be a guest on the State of the Nationals, you can email me at UnitedRepublicofMorocco@protonmail.com. Now, before I leave here, I want to leave everyone with some encouraging sounds. That is going to help lift us up and help move us in that right direction towards that freedom. So have a good evening and good night.
Freedom!
Artless I.O.
Freedom!
It's all for you.
It's all for you.
Freedom!
Keep your ears to the ground.
Talking about the freedom.
It's the best show in town.
Best show in town. Freedom. Well, 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 well. Freedom.
Music licensing reimagined.
Artless
I.O.
Rise back from the sand and claim your freedom. Talking about the freedom.
Music licensing reimagined. Music licensing reimagined.